court is ready to hear argument in 040340, City of White, Settlement, Texas, versus Superwash, Inc.
May it please the court, Mr. Michael Burkett will present argument for the petitioner. The petitioner has reserved 5 minutes to rebuttal.
May it please the court. This primarily is an estoppel case. The question being, are you going to allow a city to be estopped from the governmental function? Alexander Hamilton in the Federalist Papers wrote that it is inherent in the nature of sovereignty not to be amenable to the suit of an individual without its consent. This is the general sense and general practice of mankind. This court in 2003 in the Wichita Falls State Hospital versus Taylor case said, to waive immunity, consent to suit must ordinarily be found in a constitutional provision or a legislative enactment. Courts in other jurisdictions have occasionally abrogated sovereign immunity by judicial decree.
Well, they don't want money from the city.
No. I'll finish this and then I'll tell you where I'm going. The court continued to say, we have held, however, that the legislature is better suited to balance the conflicting policy issues associated with waiving immunity. The doctrine of sovereign immunity and the doctrine of estoppel of governments from exercising their sovereign immunity are just put sides of the same coin.
In jurisdictions where they haven't, the courts have not waived sovereign immunity, what do they do in these situations?
They have the bright line rule, quite frankly, that says you shall not stop the government from exercising its government functions, period.
The problem we've got, of course, is our decision in Pacifica, where we seem to say that estoppel can be applied against municipalities when justice requires it. And
well,
do we need to overturn that decision to go?
No, I think Pacifica, with all due respect, stands for a little more than that. Pacifica says, and I'll read it, there is authority for the proposition that a municipality may be estopped in those cases where justice requires its application and there is no interference with the exercise of its governmental functions. Pacifica tossed that statement out at the end of its opinion. It had already decided and made clear in that particular case, that it wasn't going to stop the city. And right at the end of the decision, it just said, oh, by the way, there are some jurisdictions, or there is some authority for this proposition, but it doesn't apply here.
How long would this apply? And let's suppose that no one discovered this. The car wash was completely built. The curb opening was there for 5 years. And then the city comes up and says, wait a minute. You have violated the ordinance. You have to build a fence to close this entrance.
I think there's three options available to Superwash at that point. The first, and it should be, this should be a line that should be followed in all of these kind of cases, Superwash case, any other kind of case that's similar to this. The first number one step that can be taken is to engage in the same process that got them there, the political process of zoning or rezoning a piece of property. That's a wide open process. Anything goes, anything can be said, as opposed to, for instance, variances where you're a little bit more restricted. The political process of zoning or rezoning a piece of property is wide open. It's open to public debate, and it's a decision is finally made. There's no reason why someone in Superwash's case couldn't take that tack in that particular instance,
and they're
including
unsuccessful.
One of the reasons that you go to the legislative body.
Let's assume they're unsuccessful.
All right, if you're unsuccessful, then step two is, if you had hired architects, engineers, attorneys, as you should, to determine what the proper zoning is, you go look to them. And if you're looking for some dollar relief, you go to them. third, and I really sort of hate to suggest this as a city attorney, but at some point in time, I think you can approach these situations along the lines of almost unconstitutional application of the zoning ordinance. And that is to say, look, the legislative purpose for that zoning as applied to that piece of property simply doesn't exist anymore.
Why is that?
It would be unreasonable and arbitrary to now apply it after something has been in place that long without objection from anybody, be it the property owners, be it the government, be it anybody else who could engage in the public process of debate.
Should we be concerned that your number two answer to Justice Owens' questions, hire architects, lawyers, et cetera, should the court have any concern that that would truly increase the cost of development? Just to get through the process, if you cannot rely on top officials at the zoning board or board of adjustment, then you've got to do your own research and, in fact, do the city's work. Why should this court condone that sort of waste of resources when it's the city, after all, who should know its own ordinances?
Excuse me, Your Honor. I disagree with you. I don't think it is the city that necessarily has to do the work for the development. Why should it be? These are public records. They're open and available to anybody. There are professionals who do this sort of work, engineers, architects, attorneys. Why not say, look,
why should the city be making official determinations on a permit validity, then, if they're not to be relied on?
I didn't catch all.
Why should the city be making determinations regarding a permit's validity or invalidity if what you're saying now is a developer shouldn't rely on those?
Because it's the city's job or a city administration job to carry through and carry forward public policy. That public policy is found in the ordinances and the other regulations and rules set up by the city council. That's their job. The legislative branch, for instance, says things and passes bills. The executive branch carries them out. At some point in time, that branch says and comes to the point of saying, this doesn't meet the legislative policy. Sorry, but you're going to have to change what you've done. Your question initially, or I took it to mean, is that initially, why shouldn't the city, why can't a developer rely on the city initially? And my response is, why should the city do the developer's work?
Well, because the city is issuing the permit. The city has the authority to issue or not issue a permit. Why shouldn't Joe Public Citizen be able to rely on the issuance of that permit to go forward with construction?
I think the answer is, and we've come to the heart of the question, there are more people out there that are relying on that policy than just the developer. What you have to remember is that there's a whole other set of people who are also relying on the city. And that's the people who are affected by any change in that zoning regulation. In this instance, to be specific, you have an entire neighborhood, the homeowners on Longfield Drive, that are relying on the city to protect them. And the city passed an ordinance to protect them. They are also relying on the city. So now you have competing reliance. You have the Longfield Drive homeowners who are relying on a publicly debated and a legislatively passed policy that says we will protect you. And you have reliance by a developer on a mistake that's made in a private office.
Can I ask you, aside from the governmental functions piece that you talked about from our prior decision in Pacifica, what's the equity here? If we were to look just at that side of whether it's fair to come back and make them build this fence. Is it fair in this case, in your opinion?
In this particular instance, fair is a tough question to address. Because, again, I'll go back to the Longfield Drive residents. Is it fair to them to simply abandon without any discussion or without any warning to them? Is it fair to abandon that policy that was passed to protect them?
They oppose that abandonment in this case. What if they didn't?
Again, I think I go to the suggestion that I made that I'm hesitant to make, and that is this policy now being applied correctly? Originally, you know, the zoning was passed for some sort of public purpose. Has that public purpose been abandoned or waived?
Well, and what I'm trying to get at, what's the answer to that? We have another case in which the estoppel issue is not raised, but it's looming. And in that case, a residence was built higher than it should have been. But the neighbors don't seem to care. In fact, they just soon let it stay the way it was. Is that enough to have relief in that kind of situation or not?
So, again, I think that probably should give you relief, not necessarily only in a court. It should give you relief when you go to the city council and they don't care. Why don't you change this policy?
But they didn't. And if they don't, then can you get relief from the court in that sort of situation?
On the theory that I've just enunciated, perhaps so.
Just as a practical matter, I don't know much about finding city ordinances, but this is an ordinance that just applied to four lots in a single block. How do you, if you were to go find out all the city restrictions on a particular lot, how would you find this ordinance?
Oh, you're talking about the four lots that Superwatch was on. I thought you meant the neighborhood.
No, there's 837, there's ordinance number 837-86. How do I know that ordinance applies to these? Just as a practical matter, if you're a developer, you want to know, okay, what ordinances apply to this piece of land? How do you find this ordinance?
You either go do it yourself and try to get help from the city folks.
How do you do it yourself? Are they indexed some way that shows?
Most are indexed.
So you go through how many ordinances? You have to go through all the ordinances to find out.
How important is your project to you? I would say yes, but you
so you go through all the index of every city ordinance just to make sure that there are none that apply to you?
No, because in any case, an ordinance like this is a zoning ordinance, so you don't have to go through every ordinance passed by a city council at all times. You only go to the zoning portion of the ordinances. You go to the zoning maps, which should have cross references to where you go.
But this one
doesn't. This one did not. If it doesn't, you say the zoning is shown here for commercial. Where do I go? Show me the ordinance that puts that application on this piece of property. Perhaps you could get estoppel, and it's hinted at, I think, in the Roberts case. If in this instance you ask these questions, the city people say, I've checked it for you, and you're okay.
What's the difference if somebody saying, I've checked it for you, and you're okay, versus the city's official map that says, okay?
City official map is there simply as a reference. It's a reference not only to the city people, but also to anyone else who wants to go in. It's a starting point.
And I thought there was someone in this case that said, this is okay. It said, I've read your plans, and this is okay.
This is okay as far as I know.
Well, how's that different from what you just said? From an official who says, I checked it for you and you're okay, as opposed to one who said, you know, I've looked at the map and you're okay. I mean, if the stop applies in the latter instance, I don't see why it wouldn't apply here.
I may have misspoke. The estoppel might apply if this city person knowingly tells someone that I checked it for you, there's no need for you to check it, and I know it's all right, when that city person knew that it wasn't. What you're talking about is basically fraudulent. And even then, I'm not going to sit here and suggest to the court that estoppel should apply at that point, if I'd be permitted to finish my
yes.
answer. I'm not convinced that estoppel should even be applied at that point. Perhaps that city official is in trouble.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Halliday will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the honorable court, good morning. I would like to introduce my law partner, Lee Christie, who is here with me today. This is a case that calls out on the equity side. What I would like to do in the brief time allotted to me is to try to touch on where the law is so far as I'm able to discern it and why that is the case.
Just before you get into that, the current status is that the car wash was completed and is operating?
That's correct, Judge Tate.
But there's still a controversy here, you think?
There's a problem. And the problem is this is a car wash that's located on Cherry Lane in Fort Worth. It's primarily a commercial street that goes north off of Interstate 30 as it goes west of town, west of Ridgemar Mall, out toward the west side of town. The car wash is actually physically located directly across the street from Brewer High School. There's an entrance into this car wash facility, and there are about four bays, I think. One thing you learn when you get a case to the Supreme Court is you should have done a better job having pictures and diagrams and that sort of thing when you start thinking about trying to describe this to the court. There are about four bays in that car wash, and there's a way in off of Cherry Lane, but the exit is what's missing. There's no exit off onto the other corner street, Longfield Drive, and so there's a bottleneck. And that's the problem.
So you have, to go out the way you came in. Basically.
That's right. And if it's a pretty Saturday afternoon, like it was last Saturday afternoon, you have people come in, there's a bottleneck trying to get those cars back out. That's why we have a problem here. And going to the equity question, the court below, it's important to remember, the trial court decided this case basis of a motion for summary judgment that the city filed and a motion for partial summary judgment that Superwash filed. Court of Appeals basically went along with the city's motion for summary judgment on all points except for the issue of estoppel and said that issue was something that should have been decided at trial, not at summary judgment. But Superwash did not file for summary judgment on the estoppel issue because of these equitable facts and concerns that are present. We did present evidence to the trial court, and it's in our record, that Superwash contracted to buy the lot where the car wash is located, contingent upon receiving all necessary permits and approvals from the city to put a car wash facility there that they would need in that type of instance, which is a car wash that had an entranceway and an exit way onto the side street. Superwash approached the city, talked to the person who was charged with the responsibility of reviewing applications for site plans for commercial facilities such as this one, and try to determine if this was a permitted use and also if this was a use that the city would approve. That building official, Wayne Carlisle, whose deposition was taken, I believe whose complete deposition is in the record in this case, either from excerpts that we filed or that the city filed, approved the application after reviewing the materials that Superwash submitted, looking at the zoning map that's on the wall to see if this particular piece of property across from Brewer High School would support a car wash facility.
Who was doing this for you?
I'm sorry?
Who was doing this for you? Hiring an architect, as Mr. Burkett suggests?
No, Justice Brister. They had someone who was associated with the company, as I understand it, made contact with the city and corresponded and talked to them on the telephone.
So is there any equity on the other side that, of course, you all decided to do this the cheap way rather than hiring an architect who would have known that the city person was mistaken?
Well, I'm sure if they knew now, they knew then what they know now, then maybe they would have paid the extra whatever it was to avoid having to pay me to pull the irons out of the fire. But they don't have the the luxury of thinking like lawyers going into these things. What they do is they do these projects as any reasonable operator would do. This isn't Walmart. It's not Target.
But what is a standard operating procedure to secure a permit?
For superwash, what it
in
is...
In this jurisdiction?
In the city of White Settlement, Justice Medina, Mr. Burkett might... would know more than I, but as I understand, the process was to go to the city to make application, to have the site plan approved, and to have a building permit issued. And then after the construction is completed, the city would come in and inspect what had been done and then issue a certificate of occupancy.
We, of course, have to look at the bigger picture here.
Absolutely.
And what if this were it was a building permit and there was some safety issue? The building inspector had said, okay, here's your permit. You don't have to have sprinklers in your high-rise. Or you don't, it's some safety issue. And the person started the project, was about 45% through, and then the building inspector realizes, oh, my heavens, I made a mistake. Are we going to stop the city at that point?
I don't think so, because that goes into the balancing of what the equities
are. So we're going to have a jury trial on every one of these. That's my...
Well... Not necessarily a jury trial on every one of these. I think there are going to be cases. There's going to be the five-year case that you talked about where I would think everyone would, but most folks would agree that there is a point beyond which a municipality ought to be a stop.
On what legal theory?
On what legal theory?
And when do you reach that point?
The legal theory is, described in the Pacifica case, and that is when justice, fairness, and fair dealing require.
And when there's no interference with the exercise of governmental functions.
Exactly.
How is it that overriding a city's ordinance doesn't interfere with the city's exercise of its governmental functions?
Depends on how narrowly you define interference with governmental function. Does that mean any action involving zoning is sacrosanct and can't be touched? Or does that mean, as some of the later cases, including the McGuire case and this City of Fredericksburg case out of the San Antonio court held, it has to do with whether, if you stop the city in this particular case, does that somehow set up an impediment for the city later doing the thing, in this case, in terms of zoning? Here, there's no interference with governmental function of the city if the court were to affirm the Court of Appeals and if ultimately the city is a stop to enforce this zoning ordinance. The evidence that's in the record, at least up to this point, that's from Mr. Carlisle, the building official, is this is the only piece of commercial property that he knows of in the city of White Settlement that has any kind of a fencing requirement, such as the one that's present here. I think, though, if you're talking about some sort of an overriding safety, public health or safety concern, such as what you posited, Justice Owen, that's something that comes it comes much closer to the idea of what the true governmental function should
be. Well, and perhaps that example of Justice Owen's would be more consistent with the way we wrote Pacifica, to say this estoppel applies only in exceptional cases to prevent manifest injustice. And how does this case here meet that test?
Why doesn't Pacifica control? That's an excellent question. This case is different. If you look at the facts of the Pacifica case, as then Justice Greenfield wrote, that's the case involving the city of Hutchins outside of Dallas and the 44 acres that the Pacificas acquired. They bought the property, apparently relying on the resolution that had been passed by the Board of Adjustment, changing the designation of that property from residential to heavy manufacturing. Thereafter, there was a dispute between the Pacificas and the powers that be at City Hall and Hutchins, and we don't know all the ins and outs of that, but it's alluded to by Justice Greenhill. Later, the City Council fails to carry that resolution forward to a change in the ordinance. After the city fails to do that, there's evidence that the Pacificas then take steps to lay foundations out on the 44 acres and to move some tires out there. It's not entirely clear that was the chain of events, but there's certainly evidence that that's what happened. So you have the city making a taking the stand. Property's purchased based on reliance on that. The city changes its mind. Then the precipitous takes some step beyond acquiring the property. That's not what we had here. What we had here in this case was the superwash buys the property, confirms that they're going to be able to build the facility they want. They start building it. They get about halfway done, and then the city changes its mind. That's not the same case. It's a different case. More money, more reliance is in this case than was in Precipitate, or for that matter, than was in the case that Justice Greenhill cited in Precipitate, which is the Harvey versus City of Seymour case that Chief Justice Hickman had when he was on the Eastland Court of Appeals. That was a case out in Seymour during the Depression where some folks wanted to build a cotton gin. And they went to the city council and said, we're going to build a cotton gin on this piece of property. Now, you just recently established a requirement that cotton gins can't be placed in this part of town. But we want to put it in there. Will you let us do it? The city council initially said yes. They acquired the property, and then, at least according to the description from the Eastland Court of Appeals, they moved some building materials out there onto that lot. And then, ultimately, when the city council voted, they did not permit the cotton gin to be built. Again, not this case. That cotton gin wasn't halfway built when the city changed its mind.
But here, it may be, I suppose we don't know yet, that the neighbors only bought there because they were assured that if anything went on that lot, those lots, there was going to be a privacy fence protecting them from exposure to them. How do you weigh that in the equitable analysis?
I think you take that into consideration, Justice Heck, and that goes into the mix. But we know from precedents that we can't necessarily absolutely rely on zoning classifications because they can change over time.
The city could have come back in and decided intentionally to change them.
Exactly. Or zoning may be waived, or through the course of time, use of the particular property may change. There are different reasons why you can't make the sole deciding factor in any case whether the neighbors object or not. Because a lot depends on whether you're going to have a car wash, or it's going to be a Krispy Kreme donut stand, or it's going to be something that people really want to have. That's not something that you should, it seems to me, set the bright letter rule of law in Texas on how it should work. Because it does make a difference. If I could just get back for a moment on Justice Owens' question about how do you go about finding whether this particular use is allowable or not. It makes a big difference, it seems to me, if the court is going to set the rule that the burden is on the developer to go in and read every ordinance, as opposed to the city who's charged with the responsibility of administering those ordinances and issuing permits. Can you imagine? We obviously can't imagine that burden of going into a city such as Dallas or San Antonio or El Paso, some large city where there would be any number of zoning ordinances that would have to be combed through. And the risk of a mistake is on the developer.
Well, we've got the same issue statewide, too, don't we? Let's suppose you're coming in with a project that would require that what used to be the TNRCC, I lose track of what it is today, but
PCEQ.
What requires some authority, and a person that doesn't have the authority says, go ahead, I approve, give you the permit. And it turns out that lots of statutes haven't been complied with and hoops haven't been jumped through. I don't think we would have stopped the state.
We would not. Different sovereign in that situation.
Why should we draw the help me here. Why should we draw distinctions between the state and the city and those kinds of permits and this permit?
The state is the descendant of the king and the descendant of what Alexander Hamilton refers to in the Federalist Papers. And the law has long been, in Texas and in other jurisdictions, to my knowledge, that waiver and estoppel did not work against the state because it is the sovereign. There are some limited exceptions. There's waivers. In this case, superwash sought declaratory relief, the Declaratory Judgment Act, in 37.004, provides for declaratory relief against a municipality for construction of an ordinance. So I guess that's one
difference. Well, I mean, you certainly have a form to bring your lawsuit. I mean, that's not an issue here, but just in substance, assuming you could probably bring a declaratory judgment action against the state as well, but on the substance, why would we say, well, we're not going to let employees who make a mistake at the state level bind the state, but employees who make a mistake at the city level are going to bind the city?
Justice Owen, I think it's just the difference in the two sovereigns and the fact that you have different statutory provisions that are in play. There may be situations, depending on different causes of action, where estoppel might implicate the issue of sovereign immunity. This is not one of them.
Have you looked at other jurisdictions? Surely this has come up where...
I have not. Cannot help the court on that point.
If this was a taking case where the city had widened Longworth, whatever the side street is, so it came right up to the car wash bays and you could no longer exit that way, since you would still have reasonable access to the property, probably wouldn't have a takings claim. Why do you get more by claiming estoppel than you would by if you wouldn't have any recovery in the takings claim?
It's just a different cause of action, Justice Brister, and here it has to do with the actions of the city and reliance on those actions. You have this equity fairness balancing that you have,
well,
estoppel, and you don't have a takings.
But what we're talking about here is whether there should be estoppel. Takings, we've got state and national constitutional specific provisions for it. We don't have constitutional provisions for estoppel. Why should we read into the common law something that's not in the, we demand to be in the Constitution for would allow you to do it?
I guess that's the question of why does the court...
Your client, I mean, it'd be the same case if this zoning prevented any access to the property at all. Then you would have pled it as a takings case. But I assume the reason you didn't plead as a takings case is because you still do have reasonable access. It's just it's a little awkward for people pulling in and out of the bays.
Well, in fact, I had a takings claim in the petition. If that's correct. In analysis of the case, you have to do more than just show something. To get recovery for a taking or damaging under the Texas Constitution, one has to do more than just show that the access has been impeded.
It's not what I would like.
Let me ask you, is there a procedure with the city to obtain, to pay a fee to obtain a higher level of review? We've recently heard arguments in the Vinesco, City of Dallas versus the Vinesco case, and there the homeowner actually paid the city to do a thorough review and inspection and approve the plans. Is there any such procedure here?
I don't know, Justice O'Neill. Again, Mr. Burkett can say, but if there is, I'm not aware of that. I think we got the standard review that was provided for in this small city, and that is to review the submittals, to look at the zoning map, and proceed from there.
Are these cases pretty rare? We haven't worried about it for 30 years, and the Courts of Appeals don't seem to worry about it very much, and there are lots of municipalities issuing lots of building permits.
One has to assume, Justice Heck, that they're not very common. There are cases, and they're cited in the brief where estoppel has been applied, but they're not in zoning cases.
Well, we had two in 1 week, though.
that's the nature of your job, I guess. I don't have a real feel for the volume. Certainly, I think there are situations where there's some measure of unfairness, but most of those cases seem to be worked out. This is just an instance where that wasn't the case.
Is there any evidence in the record that Superwash would have built this without the curb cut?
There is evidence in the case in the form of an affidavit from the Superwash officer that they would not have done that. They would not have done so had they known going in what ultimately happened. One of the points that has been raised in the briefing, and I would just like to mention it in passing, and that is the line of cases. have some nuances to this line of cases, has some nuances to it. One of those nuances has to do with whether a city still can be estopped by times expired changes.
Are there any further questions? Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
I would like to express my appreciation for the court's time today. I don't think I did that earlier. I do want to focus for just a minute. I understand questions are, the broader questions are interesting to me anyway, but to focus for a minute on this particular case. And I think you know it anyway, but I feel constrained to say it. Superwash not only has not been denied the use of its property, it hasn't been denied the use of its property as a car wash. It simply doesn't like the way the city of White Settlement said you've got to configure your property.
On the other hand, the fence is not required for the safety of school children or health. It's just to look pretty.
No, it's not to just look pretty. If you look at the record, you'll see, and I go back to this in the argument I've made to you, the fence was the result of a political process and a lot of debate, both through Planning and Zoning Commission and open hearings there and at the city council level and open hearings there and people having their say. And it,
what was the purpose of the wood? The purpose was to
insulate the Longfield Drive neighborhood, single-family neighborhood, from that commercial intrusion. It wasn't to look pretty.
How is that different from look pretty?
I would think that it cuts down on sight, cuts down on sound, and as Superwash wants to configure its property, it wants to zip cars out on the Longview Avenue. And at that point, you do endanger children who might be playing in that neighborhood.
But they can still zip out the front.
The front is on a great big commercial street, and there's no problem there.
Children have no reason to be protected there.
Well, or their parents aren't paying attention, one or the other.
Counsel, you mentioned the variance application. Is the process available to Superwash at this time?
Not as a variance, Your Honor, because Superwash is seeking to basically overturn a zoning ordinance and just say it doesn't apply, or at least a portion of it, and that's not a variance.
Does the zoning ordinance itself provide for, or does the city provide for someone to come in and seek relief if they are in a non-conforming use or if they are in a situation such as Superwash?
All cities
give the neighbors the notice and have hearings and at that point in time adjust the equity, so to speak.
So to speak, within the variance context, all Texas cities have that.
Your ordinance has that provision.
But, yes, the city is set up that way, not that ordinance, but yes, it's set up exactly that way. And
which, do you have a procedure that Justice O'Neill referred to earlier whereby you give more assurance after payment of a fee? Or?
No.
And are you aware of cities that do?
I'm sorry?
Are you aware of cities that do?
I'm familiar with the Vinesco case, and I was shocked, quite frankly, to find out that that's even being done. If anybody in one of my cities did that, I'd hit them in the head with a sledgehammer.
And why would you hit them in the head with a sledgehammer?
Because that's not their job. Start representing both city and landowners.
What's the purpose of the city having a department that issues permits? That department can be relied upon by the homeowners who want protection from intrusion into their neighborhoods or by the developers?
The primary function of that department is to ensure that the legislative policy is carried out. It's not to ensure that developers are being helped. It is to ensure that the development matches the legislative policy as enacted by the city councils.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel. The cause is submitted and the court will take a brief recess.